Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay.
For our episode this week, we have two guests. Both play soccer, and both are from Australia. And actually, both of them have played professionally as of late in Indonesia. The only thing that's really different from them is their journey from Australia to Indonesia. These two people, first interview will be with Aaron Williams, and the second one with Ante Bakmaz. Ante Bakmaz was on our first episode of the Globally Ballin podcast preview, which was a live kind of just chat with our guest on Instagram. You can find that Instagram at Globally Ballin Official. We try to do those previewing an upcoming episode. We'll have the guest on. So Ante Bakmaz, you can find that on our Instagram page, just kind of a meet and greet with the guest. But he, like I was saying, he is not the only guest on this episode. It's a double feature.
When listening to the two, listen for the similarities, listen for the differences. They're both from Australia, they both played in Indonesia, but they have very, or at least some distinct differences. So I encourage you to listen for those similarities, listen for those differences. In addition, they both get to play kind of that lightning round game. So compare those answers. All their countries won't be the same, but for the countries in which both players played, see how those countries fall on their lightning round list and see the similarities and the differences again. Also, I have to give a special shout out to the woman who works and edits this show. If you're interested or you need somebody to edit your show, send us a message and we might be able to connect. She's fantastic. I say that specifically in this episode because there are going to be a couple of things you're going to hear where my voice is low and then it jumps really high, and just brief. They're very brief, but they happen just a few times. And those are you, and those of you that are used to audio work and audio editing will know what that's all about, and you know that it can be quite difficult to fix that. So let's just say it was a lot messier and worse before she was able to edit it. So if you are looking for somebody, side note, if you're looking for somebody to edit your show or any of that audio production, give us a message on any of our platforms and we can try and connect you. That being said, any of those still minor hiccups you might hear in some of the interviews, they're brief. But the ones that you do hear, apologize. It was as clean as our editor was able to get it. That all being said, there's not a whole lot else I need to preview you on. It's other than these two men are from Australia, and as of late, their last stop was in Indonesia. I try to keep these intros and outros as short as possible. So we're going to move on to our first interview of the show with Aaron Williams. But before we do that, there's a couple of reminders I got to give you. First, the social media. You can always find Globally Ballin', on Facebook.com/GloballyBallin, Instagram at GloballyBallinOfficial, and Twitter at GloballyBallin. In addition, you can now find us on Patreon at Patreon.com/GloballyBallin. We have a bunch of stuff on there. For as little as $2 a month, there's platforms for you. We had a request come in, or just a mention, that the music in the background during the interview was kind of throwing them off a little bit, and so they just suggested maybe revisiting that idea. And so we did, and we're like, wow, that's fair, let's check into it. And so we asked some of our other listeners and some other people we know, and then we got one of the worst things that could happen was a mix of answers. And so we didn't really gain any ground whatsoever. So instead, what we did is decided to offer an extra opportunity on Patreon. So if the music really keeps you from focusing, there is an option on Patreon. It's the lowest tier that allows you to get all of our interviews. We call them short and sweet. There's no music. There is no ads. It's just cut and dry the way some of you want. And then for those of you that do kind of enjoy the music, soothing, keeps you kind of locked in the conversation, which we've also heard, those will continue to be as they are. We might experiment with some different music in the background, but just keep in mind, if that's you, if the music really throws you off, there is a platform for it. And of course, let us know that that's you, and we can continue to keep that in mind. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't already, but otherwise you can always reach us on those social media links. Continue to keep an eye out for our recent episodes. And finally, if you enjoyed the show, a rating on Apple Podcasts as well as maybe a short review is huge for us. It really is. It helps get the word out. And obviously I'm a firm believer that this word is a word that needs to get out. So any of those things that you could do, follow us on the social media, maybe a rating, maybe a review, and check out Patreon at least. All of those things would be greatly appreciated. So thank you and enjoy the show. So to start off, we'll have you introduce and say who you are and what you do.
My name's Aaron Williams. I'm from Perth, Australia. I'm a professional soccer player in Indonesia Super League, and I play for Persibaya Surabaya.
Okay, so where did your professional soccer career, football career start?
My professional soccer career started in England with Burnley Football Club in the English Championship in 2010.
Okay, and about how old were you then when that would have started?
I was 15.
15. Okay, so you get signed to go over and play in England. And how long are you over there for that, under that first contract?
I was in England for 4 years.
And how was that time in England?
It was difficult. It was fun and it was difficult. You know, I moved away from my family when I was 15 years old because I'm originally from Perth, Australia. So it was difficult to go over to England when I was so young, but it was something, football was something that I wanted to pursue as a career, and I was willing to make a lot of sacrifices to make some of my dreams come true.
Were you able to get family over there to see you while you were over there in England, or was it more when you went over to play, you were away from them mostly the whole time?
I was away for a long time from my mother and my sister, but my twin brother and my older brother both played in England as well, but we were at opposite ends of the country. So it was very rare that we got to see each other, maybe once per month or something like this.
So going professional, not only with a brother, but with a twin brother, was there an extra level of competitiveness between the two of you?
Most definitely. When we lived together in Perth, there was definitely the competitive edge. But when we were in England, it was just more of just helping each other whenever we could. And you know, it wasn't really about competition or anything. It was just, we just wanted each other to do the best that we could possibly do.
Okay, and so how many years were you in England, did you say?
I was in England for 4 years.
Okay, and then what was your next stop after England?
So after England, I got offered a contract to come back to the A-League in Australia and to play for Perth Glory, my hometown team. And so I was just about to sign for Perth Glory, and then the deal fell through and I didn't get offered a new contract at Burnley. So I came back to Perth, Australia for 2013-14, and I played local soccer here, semi-professional, just to keep myself going, and I ended up playing here for 2 years for a local team, and then I went on trial at Perth Glory and they signed me on a two-year contract.
So at this point, are you given an agent, or is it all on your own for the most part?
I had an agent when I was in England, and I was speaking with an agent here in Australia, but he didn't really help me. So it's kind of difficult because you want people to give you the best help, but at times people have alternate agendas, and it's quite frustrating. So you have to be careful who you trust, really. But I had help from my agent in England, and he just said, you know, keep going, and you know, I didn't give up. I was working as well as playing semi-professional. And then I said, you know what, it's what I want to do. I want to be a professional footballer. I don't want to be anything else. So I tried again and kind of gave it one last shot and then got offered the contract at Perth Glory.
During your semi-professional time back in Australia, were you, was it completely semi, so you weren't getting paid at all to play?
We were getting paid, but it's not big money. It was just enough money just to use on, I don't know, clothes or whatever. Yeah, it wasn't really money for everyday living. It was just a little bit of extra money.
So was it enough to where you didn't have to get another job during that semi-professional time or not?
No, not at all. I ended up working three jobs at the same time.
Wow.
It was, yeah, so it was a difficult period in my life, really. For me and my partner, we were both working three jobs. We were living at home, you know, our house rent was very expensive, so we had to make ways to pay that and also to live a comfortable life. So it was a difficult time for us, but looking back now, it definitely makes me and my partner cherish being a footballer.
I'm sure. And so at what was the year then that you officially signed back into professional soccer?
I signed in October 2015. Yeah, October 2015.
And who was that with one more time?
Perth Glory.
Okay, and how long were you with them?
I was with Perth Glory for two seasons.
Okay, and in between those seasons, as far as professional soccer in Australia, is there any job that you need to get in between seasons, or is it a full-time job just to train in between those seasons?
No, it's full-time. You get paid for 12 months. So in the off-seasons, you have to keep your fitness up ready for the following season. So it's just like any other professional league in the world, really.
Okay, and so then in 2017, you move on somewhere else?
At the end of my two-year contract with Perth Glory, I signed with the Indian team in the Indian I-League, team called Naraka FC.
Okay, and how did you come about going to play there?
So I had a friend who works in the Professional Footballers Association in Australia. And he said, look, there's an opportunity in India. My friends contacted me. Would you be interested? And I said, yes, of course. You know, I've never turned down an opportunity to continue playing football. So I moved there in 2017. Yeah.
So before we leave the Australia here in the story, how does soccer compare as far as support from the people of Australia to the other sports in Australia?
It's slowly growing. But you know, Australia has cricket. There's a national sport, the Australian Football League, and you know that's followed by thousands, maybe even millions of people here. And football is slowly growing. But hopefully, within the next 5 years, it will be on par with the other sports.
Does it bring in foreign players or not really?
Yeah, it brings in the A-League. You can bring five foreign players in, four or five. Yeah.
Okay, so you move on. And how long were you in India playing?
I was in India for 2 years, two seasons.
Okay, and how did that compare with your time in Australia and England?
Well, it was difficult because it was a new place, new surrounding, new people, you know, new language. So it was very difficult, but I was there with my partner and she made everything a lot easier to adapt to, you know. And we were able to travel around India at the same time that I was playing. So being able to see the country as well as being able to play there was definitely a bonus.
So let's talk a little bit about your ability to travel. Was that, are you talking off season you were able to, or throughout the season you were able to find some time to do that?
So during the season the games would be played every 7 days, sometimes even every 10 days. So me and my partner would fly together, we would choose somewhere new in India and fly there for a couple of days and explore, and then fly back to where we live. And then I would play my game, and then we'd have a couple more days off. So we'd choose somewhere else and fly there and so on, like that.
So soccer in India is definitely a topic we've never had before. What was the fandom like in India?
You know, you'd get some teams, like the team that I played for. We would, on a good day, we'd get 35,000, and it was nice. And then you would play in some other teams and you'd get 100 people. Like it was quite, so it was quite drastic, you know. It was because some of the teams that played would have bigger teams in that city, so they wouldn't be as followed as the other team. So you would play one team in Goa and it would only get 100, 200 people, but then you'd play the other team in Goa and you would get 20,000. So it's just,
yeah, so this team
is very different.
So in the league then, it was just teams in India. You weren't playing anyone in the neighboring Nepal or any of those other countries nearby?
No, just in India.
Okay. So after your season, you wrap up in 2019. Yep. Where do you go from there?
I came back. So in April 2019, my contract expired with Naroko in India. So I came back to Australia and I was just training individually, you know, just waiting for any opportunity to come. And then an agent from Indonesia contacted me. He got my number from one other agent and he said, there's a club here in Indonesia that's interested in signing you. They watched your video, blah, blah, blah. They want you now pretty much because it was the mid-season transfer window.
So
I just said yes.
So when your contract expired in India, whose choice was it to be done there? Was it nobody, they weren't going to re-sign you, or you were ready to be done?
I was ready to explore other countries in Asia. I'd been there for 2 seasons and I thought that I'd given everything that I could offer to the club, and they were changing owners, they were changing sponsorships, and it just seemed like it was a bit of a mess. So I just thought it would be better for me to leave.
A lot of times when we talk to the athletes playing overseas, there's a bit of a ladder that they need to climb, and different countries are a different rung on that ladder. How does India, in your mind, compare with those neighboring countries as far as the ladder that you climb to play international soccer?
With India, it's difficult because I think it's more whether the player wants to live in India, because the football is okay. You know, the football is interesting. There's nothing wrong with the football. And, you know, sometimes India can be a difficult place to live. But, you know, Indonesia, where I'm living now, I can't knock it. I love it. I've been to Indonesia on holiday many times. And when the opportunity came to live and play in Indonesia, I just said yes straight away. So.
And I want to get to Indonesia in just a second. But let's talk that hardship, potential hardship in living in India. Was that reflected on the players themselves? Like when you went over there, was it difficult for you as well, or was basically everything you needed taken care of?
For the foreigners, yeah, it was taken care of to a certain extent, but it was difficult because a lot of the players, you know, didn't have a lot of money, they didn't have very good living spaces and stuff, so it was very humbling and very, I guess, brings you back down to earth as a professional footballer, because you see that it's not all glitz and glamour everywhere. You know, people do live very hard lives, even if they are professional footballers.
So there's a big difference between the amount and the things that imports are getting versus the locals.
Yes, that's correct.
What was the rule as far as how many imports could be playing in India?
We had 5 in the team, and in the league that was the limit.
Okay. All right. So you go back to Australia, you train, then you get the opportunity to play where you at least have played as of recently, and that's Indonesia.
Yes.
Who do you sign with?
I signed with Persibaya. Surabaya.
Okay, so was this the first time you had been in Indonesia itself as well?
No, I've been on holiday to Bali, to Jakarta, to a couple of places, because Indonesia is a neighboring country to Australia.
Yeah.
So it's very, very close. So growing up, in my off seasons, coming back from England, coming back from India, me and my partner would go on holiday to Bali and stuff like this. So Indonesia is very well known to me already.
What was your first impression from the first time you hit practice in Indonesia? What was the first impression you had?
I thought that it was very professional. It was, you know, the training, the facilities and everything was really nice. It was, you know, I was expecting it to be a little bit like India because I didn't know anything really about Indonesian football, but it was definitely a pleasant surprise to see that everything was definitely very professional.
And those were your first impressions. Did that hold out, that sense of professionalism, throughout your time in Indonesia?
Yes, definitely. You know, I would go to all these different stadiums around the country, and some of the stadiums are absolutely world class. You know, they're just absolutely fantastic. And the supporters, the fan base and everything is one of the best in Asia, if not one of the best in the world, the supporters in Indonesia. So it's been a fantastic experience so far.
So that image of you playing in India in front of either tens of thousands or like 100 people, is that difference is crazy. Did you experience any of that difference in Indonesia, or was it basically the same as far as how many people were showing up to games?
Yeah, you know, Indonesians are football mad. So wherever you go, you know, you would get minimum 5,000-6,000, something like this. So it's very good. It's nice to be able to play in front of these crowds. And sometimes you would get upwards of, last season I played in Jakarta. It was a game against our rivals, Persija, and we played at their home ground, and there was 67 or 70, 71,000 fans. Yeah, it was nice.
So what about outside of the field? Do they recognize you or anything like that?
Yeah, most definitely all over Indonesia, they recognize me. But in our city, you know, the city that I live in is the second biggest city in Indonesia. So, you know, we'd go down, walking down the street, me and my partner would go to the shops, and you'd get stopped every couple of minutes asking for photos, asking for autographs. So it's nice to feel the love, really.
And how does that compare from the other places you have played?
It was similar to playing in England, with the fans, you know, asking for photos and everything. So it was quite similar to that, but it was definitely a lot more than in India and in Australia.
Were there any visible downsides that you had experienced while in Indonesia?
I think the only thing that I came across was the travel and the time between games, because I signed in halfway through the season last season, and we had to play 16 or 17 games in such a short amount of time.
Wow.
And so the last 10 games of the season, we were playing a game every 4 days. So it was, we would play and then we would fly back to a home, and then we would train one day, play, and then the next day fly, and then train and then play. And, you know, it was quite demanding on the body, but it was a very good experience.
So what's really important then for athletes, especially playing all the time, is the team doctors and health situations set up by the team and the league. And were you satisfied with all of that you were given access to?
Yes, most definitely. We would have two physios, and we would have two or three masseuses if we needed it. You know, we had all the equipment, all the recovery equipment, the ice machines and everything. So it was being able to recover, helping to recover fast, obviously helped a lot.
Okay, so I wanna kind of wrap up with something we like to do when players play in different areas, in a lot of different areas. And yep. So I'm just gonna give you a category. So it might be like team doctors, and you just tell me which one of those leagues was the strongest in that area. It gives players a good idea of what we're dealing with, okay?
Okay.
So we'll start with that one. We'll say team doctors.
England.
Food.
Australia.
Smart. Housing.
Australia.
Fandom.
Indonesia.
Game experience.
Indonesia.
That's good. That's what we need. That's what they like to hear. You know, if they're getting offers, they want to have an idea of what's out there and what what they can experience.
Definitely.
Is there anything about your journey, you know, playing in all these different countries or your current time in Indonesia that you think specifically maybe the people in Indonesia should hear, because maybe they haven't heard from you very often?
Obviously, at this time with the COVID-19 and everything, you know, it's just for everyone to stay home and stay safe. You know, I'm still contracted with Persibaya for another 12 months. So I have to do my online training and everything. So the fans are able to watch us online train and everything. So we're able to speak to them. But just to pretty much stay safe and stay healthy.
What, as an athlete, what do you owe the fans that come and support and bring in that energy that you need throughout your games?
You know, giving the fans a trophy, you know, something to smile about, you know, giving them 3 points on a weekend, you know, they work so hard during the week and they look forward to the games of the weekend, and being able to give them 3 points, you know, an exciting game to watch is definitely repaying them back to all the hours that they've spent, you know, watching us training and watching us playing. So being able to give them a trophy or give them 3 points is something that makes me feel happy.
Oh, I have one more category, and that was safety.
Safety, Australia.
Okay. All right. And that's all I have. I know I asked, but was there anything else you wanted to add for anyone listening?
No, that's it. That's it. Awesome. Actually, it's good. Thank you for the interview. It's been
no
good.
Problem. I appreciate it. And I'll send you a copy when it's all set and ready. Okay.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See ya.
So that brings us to the end of our first half of the series of interviews, our episode here. Not evenly divided. Our next interview is a little bit longer, but that one closes out our interview with Aaron Williams. Really, one of the things I want to point out is Aaron Williams talks about something that will come up in our next interview, and that's that idea of leaving home. Not really something we have gotten into too much with our interviews in the past, and I'm not really sure why. I hope to explore that a little bit more. Maybe it's that soccer requires that more. I don't know. I want to hear and see what other athletes have to say when we continue to go through this. But it is something that comes up twice. Aaron Williams mentioned leaving when he was 15, I think, going to England. And that comes up again here in our next half of the episode. If I don't get a chance to again at the end, I just wanted to thank Aaron Williams for his time and his his answers. Anytime we can do that little lightning round at the end is always helpful. It's fun for the, we've heard back from some of the fans, it's fun for them to see where their country ranks when kind of playing this game, but it's also helpful for athletes just to get a quick shot at what countries are good at certain things. You know, what country might bring a really good fan base? What country is pretty safe? What country might I get a little bit more money? You know, all of those things are really important, and being able to do it lightning round is, it makes it a little bit more enjoyable. So thank you to Aaron Williams. We enjoyed that. And off to our second half of the show with Antti Backmaz.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Louisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Louisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
The sound's coming all right on your side?
Yeah, it's perfect.
All right. Beautiful. Awesome. What's the time over there where you are?
7 o'clock. 7 o'clock.
In the evening.
Yep.
Okay. I'm shocking with the American time zones. You guys are in a different part of the world, well, obviously, but in regards to time zones, I'm out of it. That makes sense now because a lot of people watch NBA and they're always watching in the morning. So yeah, now I got it.
All right. So we're going to put this interview on the same episode as Aaron Williams and kind of.
No problem.
It fits pretty well. So we'll start off kind of just have you introduce who you are and what you do.
Yep. All right. So basically, my name's Antti Backmaz, 28, professional footballer playing in Indonesia. And I've got both Australian and Croatian roots. And I've been playing professionally since 2016.
Where did you start off in 2016?
In 2016, I was in Malta. So in that summer, I had a chance to go to Malta because it was something I wanted to do. Until then, I was playing semi-professionally, even though it was a quite good level semi-professionally. I just felt it was time to make a step. Obviously, I've always wanted to be a professional footballer. So as soon as I got that opportunity to play in Malta, you know, to do it full time and to have no other things on the side, you know, whether it be work or study, that was kind of something I wanted. And I knew when I had that opportunity to go professionally, I knew I'd make the most of it and kind of make a decent career for myself.
So how did you come across getting that opportunity to play in Malta?
Basically, I was in Holland and I got in contact with one agent. He's actually half Maltese. I mean, he was from Australia. And funny story, I played with his brother when I was younger. So we kind of had like a mutual friendship, so to speak, already. And yeah, he was doing some networking in Malta and he kind of understood, you know, what my needs were and what I wanted in my football. So yeah, so he basically sorted that out and went to Malta. Obviously, I had to trial first because I didn't really have any track record at a professional level. So yeah, he provided me the opportunity to trial. I was on trial for about 2 weeks. And yeah, after that, everything sorted itself out. And that was it. That was the end of that.
So who'd you play for in Malta?
The team I played for was called St. Andrews. So that year that was the second year they were in the highest, the first division there. So yeah, it was a really good little club, well run. And basically our goals for that season were kind of just to stay in the league, not get relegated, and just, you know, just pretty much obtain some good results and be consistent throughout the season.
So were you in Malta for one season or was it more than one?
No, it was actually less than one season. Yeah, basically I was in Malta for 6 months. And then, yeah, so basically I was there for 6 months, played about 10 games altogether. And then basically I had a chance to go to Latvia. And the thing with Latvia, what really came to my attention was the fact to play Europa League. And so for me, that was a really big pull. And obviously, it's a little bit difficult because I had a contract in Malta for another 6 months. And, you know, it was really risky what I did. You know, looking back on it, I I called the coach up personally the night before a game and I said, look, I've got an opportunity. I'm not going to be coming to the game tomorrow. And, you know, it was a massive risk when I look at it, because if Latvia backfired, then I wouldn't be able to come back to Malta. So, it was a really, you know, kind of tough situation, but I kind of went with my gut. I took the risk and, basically, I told the club in Latvia, I said, look, you know, give me one game. If you like me, take me. If you don't, then that's it. So, yeah, thankfully, I had a pretty decent game. I was really tired. I was pretty jet lagged. I didn't have a really direct flight as well. So, yeah, everything went well. And after that, in Latvia, played there for one season.
Yeah, that's quite the gamble. Would yeah. Would Malta have been able to do anything, like if they were just mad that you left? Did you have that right to leave? Or was it more just a gamble of, if this doesn't work, I'm not going to be anywhere?
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah, if it didn't work out, I wouldn't have had anything. And there was a thing, it did cross my mind. And so I was a little bit worried. But I think in those situations, you just got to back yourself as well. You know, you got to back your ability. And yeah, so that's pretty much what I did. And like I said, thankfully, the coach was happy as well, and ended up having a really good relationship with that coach. So yeah, but like I said, if things didn't go well in Malta, things didn't go well in Latvia, I don't think I probably wouldn't be able to go back, because what I did was, you know, looking back, it was a pretty bit of a low move, below the belt move. But yeah, and in saying that, the club in Malta, because I did have a contract and I technically wasn't a free player, you know, they could have made things a lot complicated as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really lucky. I was really thankful that they were kind of understanding, and they said, look, you know, we're happy to your journey to continue in Latvia. And obviously, like I said, the Europa League was a really big thing for me. And I think for a lot of kids as well, especially in the States, and I know, speaking from experience in Australia, you know, we're always watching those European competitions, and to think, you know, okay, even though it was one of the qualifying rounds, I think still to think, you know, you played in such a competition, I think is pretty cool.
So playing in Latvia, or first of all, when you were in Malta, was it just teams inside of Malta, or were there surrounding areas as well?
Yeah, it was just teams in Malta. And I'm trying to think, to give you like a little bit of a thing, if you drive 30 minutes from one end to the one end of Malta to the other, you've pretty much gone around the whole country. Yeah, so it's a really, yeah, it's a really small island. And in saying that, you know, there's only about, I think that year we only had about 12 teams in the first division, and everyone knows everyone. So it kind of gets a little bit repetitive. So yeah, unfortunately, Malta was just the Maltese teams, and I felt like for me personally, it was definitely a step up in terms of level. I feel that Latvian Strong is like a little bit better than Maltese. It's a little bit more, it's much more physical. Whereas Maltese, because a lot of Maltese, the players playing in the Maltese leagues, they're coming from Italy, Brazil, South America. So yeah, it's a lot more technical, but I would say in Latvia, it's much more physical.
All right, so how long were you in Latvia?
So Latvia, I had two stints in Latvia. So altogether, I had about a year and a half there. Yeah, I was there for one season. So basically in Latvia, they start the season from March till November, because it's just too cold to play there in winter. So a lot of our sessions that we did in Latvia were either indoors, or, you know, and even when we did go outside, it was literally too cold. Either it was too cold or it was just the snow, it was just too much snow. And I don't know your experience with like playing football in the snow, you can't really get much out of it. It's pretty much playing on the beach. that's I would probably liken it, like I'd probably liken it to that. And even when you're playing a game, you know, you try to pass the ball and there might be just a lump of snow, and it'll bobble up, come off your shin. And yeah, for me it was really difficult. You know, obviously in Australia we never had snow and stuff like that. You know, I've been exposed to like cold temperatures before, but this was just a completely different extreme. And I guess it's one of the things you have to adapt to really quickly. And because the local guys there, when they were playing in the snow, they pretty much, it looked like they've been doing it before. And obviously, you know, they've been in that situation for, you know, ever since they've been playing football in especially the local guys, since they were what, 5 or 6 years old. So it was definitely a massive shock.
So during your time then throughout, you know, Malta and then up in Latvia, had you been home yet, or have you been gone?
No. Yeah, so I was gone, because obviously the seasons didn't really align much. So as soon as I had it, like, obviously, because in Malta, they're starting like the English Premier League. So they're starting around that mid-year period. Whereas in Latvia, they're starting at the start of the year. So, I pretty much played literally a year and a half of football before I kind of really had some time with my family. And then, yeah, had to do it all again because, you know, you go back in about December and many of the teams as well. Obviously, I went to Lithuania after that. We started, early January, especially another one in the cold, right in the middle of winter.
Yeah, big travels from Latvia to Lithuania.
Yeah. So I pretty much didn't have much downtime. But I guess, I think for me, I loved my job and I loved playing so much that I was kind of willing to sacrifice that time with my family and friends because I found that through training and through playing and all that stuff, I really, you know, it really kind of took my mind off, you know, the whole missing home factor. And as well, when I was younger, I was always thinking, you know, if I it's going to sound like it's a strong statement, but if I missed home so much, I felt that my head wasn't in it as much as it needed it to be. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think I just didn't want to fill my head with the negativity and, you know, I didn't want to feel sorry for myself saying, oh, I miss home, or I didn't want to use that whole homesick factor as an excuse to cover up either a bad session or a bad game or feeling bad in that matter.
Or is that something that anybody trying to take international soccer seriously has to kind of commit to? Or was it more of a you decision that you made?
I think especially like I can only speak from the kids in Australia, and I'd like to think the kids in Australia and the kids in the States are pretty similar, because I know a lot of guys in the States, you know, they're going to Europe and they have to make a big decision. You know, it's not just, you know, a 30-minute drive to go on a trial or something. So for me, yeah, I pretty much had to accept that. But I do think it's part of the job. It's part of the thing saying, you know what, you have to leave those luxuries behind if you kind of want to make something of yourself and you kind of want to put yourself in the best environment to become a better player.
And how did your family kind of take that when you hadn't been home? That's something they kind of expected and planned it on as well?
Yeah, I think that, you know, even now, you know, I've been away from home for about 7 years, and, you know, every time you speak to your family, it's a little bit of, you know, like, oh, you know, to be honest, it does get a little bit hard seeing, you know, like, you know, when I left and, you know, obviously my mom didn't have gray hair, and now you see her again and she's got gray hair and you can see the aging and stuff like that. So it is a little bit of a shock, but I think for them, you know, they kind of accepted that was what I wanted to do, that playing football was going to give me that happiness. And it was something, you know, I literally worked my butt off for, you know, ever since I can remember, about 7 years old, ever since I started. So I think they saw how much my head was in it. And I think they kind of accepted that it wasn't like, oh, don't go. I think they knew that going over was going to give me, you know, that was the best thing that they could do by letting me go for my career.
All right, so this will sound kind of like a dark question, but I think it's important.
Yeah.
Would you say then it was worth it, missing all that time with your parents for this?
It is a dark question. I know it's going to sound really cold of me, but I think it was.
Okay.
Because if I stayed here, I would have been that guy either, and no offense to people working those jobs, but I could have been a guy behind a computer just saying, what if? I could have been flicking through IG, Instagram, or I could have been flicking through my Facebook feed. You see someone, you know what? Oh, he wasn't that good. That could have been me. So, like I said, I think with anything, not just in sport, but I think in business as well, you got to be ready. You got to be willing to sacrifice, whether it be hours, whether it be family, whether it be friends, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's something. It's something I wanted to do, and I'm the only person that can fulfill that. So, answering that question, if it's a yes or no question, so I'm going to say yes, it was worth it.
Yeah, and I...
You put me on the spot there.
No, that's okay.
It makes me sound like a cold-blooded murderer or something.
It's honest and it's important. And yeah. The what-if part is really, I think, super relatable. I think anybody out here, any of the athletes that we've had before listening back, will be able to relate to that. They never wanted to have to ask the what-ifs. And certainly the ones that are now asking what-if, I'm sure wish they...
Yeah, no... 100%, yeah. Okay. And I think saying that, I think that, like you said, like that, I think that, like, a little bit of like that cold, you kind of, for me personally, I think I needed that cold mentality, because it's not just with the family. Like, I've had a few coaches like have a go at me as well. You know, after a game, I might have made a mistake or something like that. And I think you kind of need that cold mentality to kind of just brush it off and not let things like that get to you. And going back to the whole family thing, you know, obviously it's difficult to see your family react like that. But I think if you let it get to you too much, it can play with your head. And I think when your head's not in the game, when your head's not all there, I think that's when your performance is gonna suffer. And at the end of the day, you're based on your performance. There's nothing in between. It's either you play good, you play bad, and that's it.
So again, yeah, hard question, but it's really important because it shows at least what some players should expect when it comes to the sacrifices they might need to make if they really want to make this work.
Yeah.
So what comes after Latvia? Lithuania, was that directly next?
Yeah, that was directly next. So obviously, they're neighboring countries. So to be honest, looking back, I think the Lithuanian league was much better. The top clubs performed much better in Europe. They had much bigger budgets. Whereas I think the league in Latvia was more competitive. So the gap between the top teams and the bottom teams in Lithuania was quite big. So I went to a club. We weren't a big club. We weren't a bad club. We were kind of just like mid-table, pushing for like a top four position, whether to get into Europe or something like that. And yeah, I was there for 6 months, but I just felt that I just couldn't adapt. Yeah, I didn't feel I was playing my best. And then I decided after 6 months to go back to Latvia, kind of find my feet again, so to speak. You know, try to go back to a you know, similar culture, similar playing style, kind of just to get my motivation back. You know, in Lithuania, it wasn't all too good. I started the season pretty well, and then we weren't getting some results. And yeah, I just felt like, oh, you know, as time went on, I was really trying to work hard and trying to get out of that slump. But I think sometimes you need to reevaluate and say, you know what, is this really doing something good for me, or is it making myself even worse? So yeah, Lithuania was pretty short. It was only there for 6 months, and I went back to Latvia where I finished out that calendar year.
So you're bouncing around from place to place. And what about housing? Are they setting this up for you? Like when you
Lithuania
and go to Latvia, you go, hey, I need a place to stay, I'm coming back.
Yeah, pretty much. But that's another thing as well, that all the clubs I've been to have been really good in regards to housing, especially if you're a foreign player as well. And even saying that, even the local guys that came from cities that were quite far away, the clubs have always been really, you know, really good, you know, providing them a house, stuff like that, or just like helping them out if they need to sort out some documents with like a government agency or whatnot. So obviously it depends on the level a player is going to. Obviously, if a player is going to like an amateur team, it's not going to be that easy. Whereas like I was kind of lucky, all the clubs that I went to, they've been really professional and they always looked after the foreign players really well. And you know, if there was a problem, there was always someone on call ready to either drive, help, translate, buy, just those little things to make that transition a little bit easier.
So after Latvia the second time, where did you go?
So basically, I had a chance to go to Australia in the A-League. So the A-League's the highest division in Australia. So I had a trial there with the Central Coast Mariners. And I was there with Usain Bolt. I don't know if I think the whole world remembers his cameo appearance in Australia. Yeah, so I was there. I was caught up in that whole media whirlwind, so to speak. And yeah, I was there with him for about a month or so, I would say like that. But in Australia, it didn't work out. We have a system. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It's called like the salary cap. So every club has a certain, every club has a certain amount of money to spend. So it's kind of like it makes the competition fair. So like, obviously you look in England, the clubs with more money, they're able to get better players compared to like a club with not as much. And basically, yeah, I was there and yeah, they were pretty much calculating the wages. And unfortunately they called me and yeah, they pretty much didn't have any money left in their salary cap. So yeah, I was kind of left on my butt a little bit, but I think that was a good eye opener. You know, for me, I've always wanted to come back and play in Australia, especially in the highest division as well. So yeah, I did, for me personally, I think it was like really good feedback. I did really well there. And yeah, I was pretty much, you know, if they didn't have that problem, I would have signed in Australia. But you know, looking back, obviously Bolt was there. It was kind of a bit of I'm going to say my personal opinion, I think it was a little bit of a joke. Definitely, obviously, this is my opinion. Yeah. Definitely not good enough. But you know, it was pretty cool to be, you know, day in day out with the fastest man in the world. I think it's gonna keep a records for quite a bit of time. So yeah, and not just an amazing athlete, but I think a world icon. I think everyone in the world knows who Usain Bolt is. Oh, yeah.
How long did his little journey last in soccer?
I think he had like a trial period for about 6 weeks, and they were putting it out to say like, oh, we're going to give him enough time as possible to kind of adapt. But I think it's really difficult, because if you haven't been training, you know, I wouldn't say training, but even just playing on the street, you gain those motor movements and, you know, those general foot patterns and stuff. And, you know, if you go out on the street and you give someone a ball and you try, you know, serving them a few volleys, or, you know, try looking how they pass the ball, you can tell who has been doing it from a young age and who just literally saw a ball yesterday. And I think you could really tell that, you know. I think if he was training football more than he was sprinting, he wouldn't be the fastest person in the world. So it's a difficult, I think for him, you could just tell it was just a hobby. But I think it was one step just too far.
Were there athletes who were legitimately irritated by his attempt to play?
Yeah. And not just the players and the team, and, you know, even the coaching staff as well. Because after that season, that team had a really poor season, unfortunately. And they had really good intentions. You know, they had a really good coaching staff. So, and I was following, and I was really disappointed. I just felt the whole Bolt thing just really disrupted their whole mojo kind of thing. And not just in that team, but I think for many young Australian kids, where the league doesn't have opportunities for young Australian players, and just to throw a guy in who had, let's be honest, zero talent compared to so many young Australian players, I think was a little bit of a slap in the face.
And I definitely can see that point and that that angle to it. So how long did you stay in Australia?
I was there until about just after Christmas. So yeah, I was about there for about 3 months, so to speak. So I had that trial for 1 month, and then yeah, that all finished. And I was, like I said, I was kind of on my butt again. I was reassessing, you know, okay, do I go back to Europe? Do I give playing, you know, back in Europe one more shot, or do I try something new? And yeah, I opted for trying something new, and that's when the whole Lebanon experience came. And I think it was something I always wanted to play in the Middle East. And obviously that club in Lebanon was the biggest there, which was another pool, and they were playing also in like it's called the AFC Cup. So that's pretty much the Europa League equivalent in Asia. So obviously in Asia has the Asian Champions League and the AFC Cup. So yeah, I think that was like I said, that was another big factor as to why I decided to go to Lebanon.
So all these different places you're going, is this your agent still getting you these positions, or are you in a position to find them yourself?
To be honest, I've had a bit of a nightmare with agents and
stuff. Oh, you were definitely the first one to say that.
Yeah, so no, these were all different. And I think as well, you know, obviously it's different when you're in that top 5%, 10% of elite players. You know, you can sort yourself out. But the reality is a lot of guys, you know, they're really going to do their own networking. And you know, I'm lucky I have a Australian passport, and obviously Australia, they come under the Asian umbrella. So basically a lot of teams in Asia and the Middle East, they have like a quota for a player with an Asian passport. So whether that could be Japanese, it could be Korean, could be Australian, could be Syrian, Iraqi, Iranian, anything like that. And so, yeah, I fell under that umbrella, which meant I could play in those Asian competitions.
All right. And so how long did you say you were in Lebanon?
I was there for 6 months. So I joined midway through their season, because they're starting in mid-year. So I joined there, I was there for 6 months, and I pretty much joined there to the end of the season for their league and cup campaign. And yeah, that was it.
Okay, and so then after Lebanon, where were you? Was that where we go to next?
That's Indonesia. Okay. So to be honest, in looking back, I think I made a really good move, because in Lebanon, that new season started, and the league got cancelled after, I think, 3 games, because the whole country was protesting. Yeah, so I think looking back, you know, to be honest, I really wanted to stay in Lebanon, but the situation there was really rocky. It wasn't stable. And obviously Indonesia as well. I think Indonesia is now getting that global reputation, you know, and a lot of people following it on social media about the whole supporters and stuff like that. You know, everyone there loves football. Everyone, not going to say everyone, but the majority of people are following it and either following it on social media or they're going to the games or there's, yeah, it's just that it's literally a football mad place. And I think as a player, you know, I think every kid has a dream to play in front of a full stadium of 50,000 people. And I think there, you know, I was close. I played in some really nice stadiums, but I think there that's where I really felt like a professional footballer. Yeah.
So we'll get into Indonesia in a second, but I want to play a game that we usually do whenever we have an athlete who's played in more than, say, two countries or so.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a topic, like
team
doctors, and you just tell me what league was the best for it, okay?
Okay. I think that's the best one because, yeah, there are a lot of bad ones as well.
Yeah, let's start with that one. Team doctors, who had the best setup health-wise?
I'm going to say Latvia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fan experience, like, at the games. The fans at the game.
Indonesia.
Fans outside of the game.
Lebanon.
Safety.
I'm going to say Holland, Netherlands.
Housing.
Good questions. Latvia.
Food.
Lebanon.
And then pay.
Next question.
That's fair.
Indonesia.
And yeah. I figured that's usually how the ladder works, right? I mean, that's kind of what we figure.
Yeah.
But at least it gives a player an idea of maybe what area. Kind of gives them an idea of what that ladder looks like.
All of course. And yeah, and I think, and to add on that, I think if you ask every foreign player that goes to Indonesia, apart from that whole fan experience, the pay is the next thing, the next factor as to why they're going. Like that's not a secret. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Indonesia and your experience so far. What was your first impression getting to Indonesia?
First impression, I think I was really surprised. Like I've never been to Indonesia before I've never really been to Southeast Asia. So, and I always thought Southeast Asia was kind of just like a whole bunch of villages and stuff like that. But I went to I went to like a really big city and I was really surprised, you know, a lot of like high rises, you know, bustling, a lot of people. So yeah, I was really surprised with the infrastructure and stuff like that. And look, obviously it was hot, but I kind of already, already acclimatized to the heat. You know, I was in Lebanon, I played in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain and stuff like that. So that wasn't too much of a problem for me. Food as well wasn't really a problem, you know, kind of like an open person when it comes to global cuisine kind of thing. So yeah, that was kind of my first impression. And then obviously with the football, I was really surprised, you know, everyone was really, all the players were really nice when I got there on my first day. I was in Madura United, was my first club. And yeah, to be honest, the technical level of the Indonesian players was really high. So that was something, that was my first impression. I was really surprised and I was kind of really happy because from my experience, a lot of people were saying, yeah, it's not really the best league and stuff like that. But, you know, looking back on it, I think the level was quite impressive.
At what point did people start recognize you off the field, or did that happen while in Indonesia?
I think because once a photo goes out on Instagram or something like that, then everyone knows, like, because you need to realize that there's not many Western people living in Indonesia. So it's not just the fact that I was a football player. I think if any kind of Westerner goes down and takes a walk on the street, I think they're going to get stopped for a photo. And that's purely because they're not from Indonesia. So, you know, even my girlfriend came to Indonesia and people were asking her for photos and stuff like that. So, but I think in saying that, I think a football player does have, is a lot more, how do I say, a lot more famous than I would say just like a random. And obviously if you're recognizable as well, that's also another thing.
What year did you start in Indonesia? Was that this past year?
Yeah, that was the past year. So that's mid-2019.
Okay. And who were you with?
A team called Madura United.
Okay. And where were they located?
Just an island off Surabaya, which is, I would say, okay, Indonesia's hard because it's a bunch of islands.
Yes.
But I'm going to say about an hour from Surabaya, which is a pretty big city in Indonesia.
And so how was the gameplay compared to the other places you were at?
First thing was it was just a lot more open. So I think compared to other leagues I was in, Indonesia, I would say tactically wasn't the strongest. So yeah, a lot of games were literally like a game of basketball. Like one team attacks and it just goes up, down, up, down, up, down. Whereas, you know, in Latvia, so to speak, you know, a lot of teams were negative. So one team could always have the ball. The other team could just like literally be defending the whole game. But I felt in Indonesia, I feel that all the games were even. There wasn't really a gap between the top teams and the lower teams. So yeah, so, and in saying that, sometimes like the team, like even I was playing in, we were sometimes our own worst enemy. So sometimes you weren't just playing against the opposition, you're kind of playing against yourself kind of thing, because whether it be like the decision making, whether it be like the positioning, yeah, sometimes you felt that, you know, like you really shot yourself in the foot at times.
So did you stay, like when you're planned, when you go sign to play in Indonesia, is that the plan to be there until you get your next bid?
Yeah, pretty much. So I signed the contract there until the end of the season, and yeah, that was pretty much it. And then I think looking in Indonesia, I kind of had like, you know, it was a place that, you know, I think as a foreigner, you know, it's a really good lifestyle. It's really nice, you know, playing games in front of so many people. To be honest, you can never get tired of it. It's just such a massive rush. So yeah, I think that's why there's a lot of foreigners. They just try to do their best to stay there for as long as possible. And I think a lot of them leave with like really good memories of Indonesia.
What would you say to any of the fans listening right now about your experience in Indonesia?
To the Indonesian fans or just in general?
No, to Indonesia specifically.
I think they're a really wonderful bunch of people, really passionate and really welcoming as well. In saying that, I think, you know, I always wanted to make an effort to kind of fit in with their culture. So, you know, I took it upon myself to learn the language, and it's something I really give advice to a lot of like boys going overseas. Like every country I've been, you know, I've tried to learn the language. Even if the languages weren't accessible by online course, I think, you know, you have so much time in the day to learn something new. But that's a different thing. But going back to the Indonesian people, like I said, I think it's a really, you know, really open, you know, warm-hearted, kind, generous group of people.
And what would you say, looking back kind of through all your experiences, some advice you have for any of the young players out there?
My advice, I think one is to one, kind of be realistic, to really, like, you know, really be harsh on your performance. Like, you know, I was really always like, you know, harsh on how I was playing and stuff like that. And, you know, it's important to have goals as well. But in saying that, you need to make the proper steps to get to those goals. So you can't go from, like, you know, amateur to the Premier League in like 1 year. Like, for me, that's just it's not really. You look at like a story like Jamie Vardy, for example. Obviously he went from like amateur to the Premier League, but he did it making those like baby steps in between. You know, he went to League Two, he was in, you know, Conference, and then he went to, you know, then he went to like the, he went to Leicester, obviously, and it's stuff like that. So I think that, and I think as well, apart from the whole training and application part, I think as well fitting in, I think trying to assimilate yourself into like the certain country, whether it be learning the language or trying to get accustomed to the food, I think that's something that's a really big piece of advice that I'd give to a lot of young players, is to try, you know, in your off time, not just like try, you know, stay away from Netflix for too much, but, you know, try learn the language. And because a lot of foreign players that go to like new clubs abroad, you know, they find it really hard. And I think when you can talk to the local players, I think they're going to accept you a lot more than if you don't make an effort to kind of fit in.
What about any regrets that you had so far?
It's a funny one, because I think I'm going to say regrets. I'm trying to think. You know what? To be honest, probably not going to. I had a few options to go to Indonesia before.
Okay.
I think that was, yeah. So I'll probably say that's a regret. But in saying that, I think by staying in Europe that little bit longer, I kind of made myself a better player. So I could put myself in a better position to go to Indonesia, if you know what I mean. So I kind of felt that extra time that I gave myself in Europe, I think, you know, it kind of gave me, you know, when I was going to Indonesia, to say like, you know what, I've had all these years in Europe, I've learned all these things, I've played in so many different systems under so many coaches, formations. So I was able to kind of adapt to pretty much a lot more things than if I'd just gone pretty early in my career, where I wasn't really tested. I didn't really put myself in any like pressure situations. And looking back on it, if I did have the chances to go to Indonesia when I did, I wouldn't have played in the Europa League. I wouldn't have played in AFC Cup. I wouldn't have played in some of the nicest stadiums in the world. So yeah, it's kind of like a give and go kind of thing, isn't it? But that's the way I look at it.
Is there anything, you know, we haven't talked about that you think you want to mention or that they should know?
I think that's it. I think the questions have been really good. I think you've really touched on pretty much every aspect of, and you've really, I think as well, you know, I think another thing is those behind the scenes, behind those Instagram photos, what lies for, and what's the reality for a lot of players, you know, really grinding and trying to make something of their careers. And I think, you know, it's not all, you know, nice photos and stuff like that. There's a lot of, like we touched on earlier, there's a lot of sacrifice and there's a lot of, you know, bad days and stuff like that. And I think if you're mentally equipped with the right attributes and you can get through those things, I think you're gonna really enjoy the positives.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's kind of what we're going. That's definitely what we go for. And so we appreciate your time and your honesty and answers. It's going to be very helpful for anyone listening and fun mm-hmm. for the fans too to kind of hear from you. So
no problem.
Thank you very much. Stay safe and healthy. And I'll send you a copy when this is all done. Okay.
No problem. Thanks for having me. No problem. Like I said, even with the interview, the questions were really good. And even the ones here and you know, I've done a lot of interviews before, and I think this is like the only one that kind of, you know, even for me personally, kind of just made me reflect on, okay, like what I've been through and stuff like that. And, you know, I really want to give the advice because I feel like the kids growing up, you know, I don't know, I'm 28 now. So I feel like I grew up in like a little bit of a different generation to the ones now and stuff like that. So I think, you know, they need to kind of be aware that, yeah, it's not all rosy and there's only certain amount of positions in top clubs where kids can go and you know, unfortunately they're not all good enough to play there as well, and I'm sure they may not be good enough, but I think there's definitely a place in the game for players that do want to make a living out of sport. So yeah
exactly. I'm not a game analyzer at all. I'm more about the experience and kind of talking
yeah
about that, so I appreciate yeah. that very much. And again, I'll let you know when this is all set. Thank you.
No problem. Have a good night. Look after yourself. And we'll keep in touch. If you need anything, obviously I'll do the resharing and stuff. And yeah, because awesome. I've been looking at the page and I was looking at a few other like podcasts and stuff like that. I think it's like really cool, like seeing the guys like, you know, playing volleyball in different countries and
right?
stuff. Like that. I think
I
that's yeah,
that.
I know. Yeah. So no, for me that was like really interesting. And you know, like obviously we can only speak from like a football perspective, but like it's pretty cool. Like, you know, I've seen so many like American guys like playing, you know, playing ball in like, you know, even Croatia. It's like so random. Where the hell did you come from? How did you get there? So, yeah, it really kind of, you know, like finishes the puzzle, so to speak. So, yeah, I really enjoy it, man. I really do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem, mate. No problem. See. Keep in touch, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, mate. Bye-bye.
And so with that wraps up our second half or second part of the episode with our interview with Ante Bakhmaz. The part in there I told you to keep an eye on or listen for was mentioning leaving family behind in order to reach some sort of a goal, whatever that goal may be. And the reason why I kind of wanted to wait until after the second half was because of a very vivid description Bakhmaz uses in the episode, and that's he mentions leaving his mom and when she doesn't have gray hairs coming back and seeing that she has some. That whole idea of just visualizing somebody as close to you as your mother changing because while you're gone and missing that, I think really illustrates to what he and others like him have put behind in order to reach a set goal that they had. It's hard to tell because the question went really well, but asking him if he would do it all over again, or I forgot the exact wording, when it came to leaving his family behind in order to pursue his dream, that was a tough one to ask. I mentioned it in the actual interview, but I was nervous about asking that one. but I really thought it was important and it couldn't have went better. So it was a very fantastic response, and it illustrates just how much some of these people are giving up in order to fulfill their dreams. And by giving up that much, it's illustrating just how highly they value that dream. That being said, there's not a whole lot else to wrap up. I thank both guests once again, Aaron Williams and Ante Bakmaz. Like I said in the beginning, a special thanks is in order to the one who helps edit and assemble these episodes. If you are looking for someone to edit your material, go ahead and send us a message and we can maybe connect you, because she's fantastic. And like I mentioned in the beginning, we had a few issues that only a really trained audio analysis ear will probably be able to catch. But for the most part, a lot of that was able to be fixed. So that being said, again, thank you to our guests. Thank you to everybody for listening, and you'll hear back from us soon. Hey everybody, thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter @globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music free, as well as ad free, and a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.